Hello and a very warm welcome to Econde Unplugged on Thursday, the 21st of September 2023. Toe Sheehan's on the US East Coast, Max Sarto's in British Columbia, Brian Jackson's in Sydney, and I'm Jeremy Hawkins here in London. Well, there's been a bucket load of central bank announcement in recent days, and in today's podcast, we'll pull them together and offer some thoughts on what we think is most likely to happen next. But with many investors starting to believe that central bank interest rates have finally reached their peak, or at least are very close to them, it's worth casting an eye on the oil market. Earlier production cuts by the so-called OPEC Plus group had already helped to underpin prices globally, but Saudi Arabia's recent decision to extend its 1 million barrel a day reduction through September, combined with Russia's latest move to temporarily restrict its exports, has provided an additional boost. Prices of Brent, the international benchmark, topped $95 a barrel earlier this week for the first time since last November. And to put that in context, it's more than 30% above the sort of levels we saw around the middle of last year. Energy prices might be stripped out of core or underlying inflation measures, but consumers still have to pay them, and central banks' targets are typically couched in terms of overall CPIs. If current or even higher oil price levels are sustained, headline inflation over coming months could be in for some nasty upside surprises. So ignore oil at your peril. Okay, that said then, let's start off with a roundup of what's been going on with all these central banks. Terry, FOMC announced on Wednesday, market consensus was seemingly pretty unanimous for no change, which proved to be right, of course. Do you think we're actually at the top of the interest rate cycle, or are we simply back in pause mode again?
We could be. The FOMC and Chair Powell was pretty clear that there is still the possibility of another rate hike later this year. But that's the forecast. That isn't their plan, as Powell was saying. And much will depend on the economic data. But it seems like the U.S. is experiencing a period of moderate growth, a cooling but not cold labor market, and solid improvement in inflation and steady inflation expectations. So I don't think the FOMC could ask for much more than that. So we could see the pause extended through the November meeting, and maybe not yet at all this year.
You mentioned something of the economic outlook, and I was going to ask you about that from just the quick glance I had at some of the latest forecasts. The growth numbers look, certainly by most international country standards these days, pretty respectable. I mean, growth, I think, well, this year now they got 2.1%, so that's more than double they had in June. 2024, 1.5%, so that's up at 1.1%. They reduced their unemployment rate forecast quite significantly by the end of this year anyway. I think we're down to, 3.8%, if I remember rightly. And yet they've got core CPI this year just 3.7%, down from 3.9%, and no change in 2024 at 2.6%. So without trying to, throw too many numbers at people, as you say, it kind of suggests we're talking about almost a perfect soft landing scenario here. Do you think that's really plausible, or what's going on?
Well, Powell was asked about that yesterday in his press briefing, and he wasn't willing to say that a soft landing has been achieved, but he was pretty positive that they have managed to navigate that narrow path that he talked about a year or so ago, and that they have actually seen a pretty good outcome. So yeah, it looks like, absent some shock, like a failure to fund the federal government, the U.S. economy actually looks like it's going to manage that soft landing.
All right. Let's assume then perhaps we are at the plateau for U.S. interest rates. When do you think it might be plausible to assume we could see the first cut coming through?
Well, the policymakers have been pretty clear that policy is going to stay restrictive for a while. It really looks like the second half of 2024 is probably the earliest to make a reasonable expectation of it.
Okay, fair enough. In the intro, I talked a little bit about oil prices. Were there any kind of concerns indicated from Powell or the statement itself regarding what's going on in the energy market at the moment in terms of what sort of impact it might have on inflation in the States?
Well, it's clear that it already has had some impact on consumer prices. It was visible in the last consumer price index report. It's always a disappointment to monetary policymakers when total inflation goes up more. But if they're looking at the core, which they are, as Powell said, it's looking past oil prices, they're still seeing that steady, slow improvement that they want. Oil prices, however, could mean that, you know, even if the economy's going along pretty well, they're going to keep rates more restrictive for longer.
Okay, so it's kind of the, you know, the higher for longer type scenario that people are starting to talk about now.
Yep.
All right. From the other side of, perhaps I can ask you just quickly about the United Auto Workers Union and their decision to go on strike at, I think, was it General Motors, Ford and Chrysler? So we're talking here the kind of strike, at least in terms of the auto side goes anyway, we haven't actually seen before. Was there any kind of mention about the possible economic impact that could have on the US economy? I guess it's fairly early days yet. Obviously, we don't know how long this is going to go on for. But is that a concern for the Fed, or is that something they're just going to look through anyway?
Well, it's definitely a concern. But, you know, unless the strike goes on for a very long time, you know, any jobs lost during the strike will probably be made up once it's settled. But it still is a source of drag on the economy at a time when everything else is going pretty well. So it may cut into overall growth in October, maybe November.
And I guess, is this can be seen as a test of, you know, potentially the economic implications of the labor market being as tight as it is for, you know, as long as it has been, as to what comes out of these strikes?
Well, it is interesting that, you know, they're striking at all three major automakers, which is a new thing. And I think it is something of a statement that right now American workers, due to tight labor supply and demand for skilled workers, have a little more leverage and they're exercising it.
States-wise and also so many other countries as well. Okay, anything else you'd like to add, Terry, before we move on to Max?
No, I think that's it for now.
Okay, that's great. Okay, thank you muchly for that. Max, okay, Bank of Canada, I guess what they announced just over a couple of weeks or so ago now, with no change as expected. But I thought it was interesting, the statement seemed to be talking about, you know, some indications of a bit of cooling taking place in the labour market, which is fair enough. So that certainly helps to justify no change in rates. But since then, of course, we've had the August employment report, which was surprisingly strong. And what, just on Tuesday, we had inflation figures for August, which were, again, well above the market expectations. So I guess I've got to start off with the same question I'd asked Terry. Do you think interest rates, as far as the BOC is concerned, have they plateaued yet, or do you think there's still upside risk there? Hello, Max.
Oops, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. The way the governor and one of the deputy governors, the way they describe the situation here is, it's not like the Bank of Japan. They're not in a, you know, overshoot commitment mode, but they really are trying to be to try to find the balance between, you know, avoiding over tightening and at the same time under tightening. So it can be they may be in a pause. Now, they didn't say the word pause, and the statement was a little bit still hawkish, saying if they have to, they're going to raise again. So I think what they're concerned about is as long as you know, a lot of workers still get wage hikes, or you know, the steady stream cash, then the higher interest rates, they'll get used to it and not going to really cool off the economy.
So your bet then, do you think we might still have another interest rate to come before the end of the year?
My take is not likely. They seem to be sort of stressing the fact that cumulative effects may come into play. The real situation, the difficult situation for them is the latest CPI, of course. We saw the headline CPI rate going up to 4% from 3.3%, and that's mostly from the gasoline prices. But, you know, the rent is high. You know, we have a housing affordability crisis in Canada, and the federal government is finally saying, you know, they have to do something about it too, not just the regional governments. But if you take a look at the details, not just gasoline prices, rent, mortgage costs is still high, and also the food easing but still high. So strip off some factors, the core is still high. So that's probably bothering the Bank of Canada people. But at the same time, I wouldn't expect them to raise just because the CPI and the rate is high, because governor has already said we're going to see the rate going up for at least a couple months. I guess that includes this latest August report.
Okay, fair enough. I guess I should also ask you, although it's really politics more than anything else, but this sort of growing spat we have at the moment between the Canadian government and India, has there been any kind of knock-on effects there which have been obvious in terms of Canadian financial markets?
I don't think it's going to be a major factor for the markets and economic growth. But it is hurting the credibility of the current government, and especially mm-hmm. Prime Minister. Well, he doesn't have to call an election right away, but if anything, maybe a temporary, you know, decline in traveling between the two countries. But I think Canada's, in terms of exports, Canada's more heavily reliant on shipments to the States. So I don't see an immediate impact on the markets or growth.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else on Canada?
We're all looking at the next Bank of Canada policy decision, and at the same time quarterly forecast in the report, and they may have to revise down this year's you know, the GDP growth forecast, and see how much they have to revise next year's at the moment.
Okay, thank you for that. And before we let you go, let's have a look at Japan then. Obviously, got the Bank of Japan announcement due, a few hours away now. Any real speculation that we might see any kind of shift, albeit presumably if there's going to be one, just a subtle one?
If there's any change to the statement, it's going to be very subtle. They made the major sort of a rework in July, and they made the operation more flexible, which means that is for, you know, in the longer term, they can keep the yield curve control system a little longer without being forced to give it up. One of the interesting comments from the governor that was an interview with a newspaper was that he said the possibility is not zero that they may be able to decide whether wage growth will continue into the high wage growth will continue into fiscal 2024, which starts in April. So that's still a kind of a distant future. You know, he's not saying, okay, we're going to decide in December at the December meeting whether we should lift the overnight rate or not. So I don't think there's any immediate need to change the yield curve control details or statement, like if necessary, they're going to ease again.
Okay. I saw some comments coming out. I think it's from BOJ governor, intimating that the bank should have enough data by the end of the year to determine whether or not it can actually proceed with any kind of policy changes. So if that is the case, what are they actually looking at if they are going to make the decision, you know, by say December time, whatever it might be, as to what they're going to do with policy in 2024?
Well, I think the board is going to approach very carefully, because you know, they're almost there, right? They're almost there to achieve the 2% inflation target, but at this point, their latest forecast, going back to July, and we're going to have a new one in October, is that fiscal 2024 CPI minus fresh food is forecast at 1.9, and then 2025, 1.6. So that means it's not what they call a stable inflation price behavior. So I don't think they want to definitely raise rates if they have a hint from business leaders that they're trying to raise the wages going forward.
All right, and I've got to ask you clearly about what's going on in the FX markets, because I guess dollar strength at the moment is an issue for a whole range of the Asian countries and their governments. We've seen, well, dollar yen sort of knocking on the door of the 150 level. It's clear it's backed off a little bit from that today. But this month, I should say, we've seen on a trade weighted, if I can say it, a trade weighted basis, the yen trading at its weakest level this century. So, I mean, is this an issue that the BOJ is concerned about, and might it have any kind of input into what it decides to do either at today's policy announcement or at the back end of the year?
I don't think it's going to be a major driver. You know, for one, you know, nobody can really control the FX rates. Mm-hmm. And also, it's up to the Ministry of Finance's operation teams and, you know, Vice Finance Minister's decision whether to intervene or not, in coordination with the Fed, at least. And the problem is, if they have to intervene, they don't have much ammunition. You know, they have to rely on foreign reserves instead of the reverse intervention, which is to basically print a lot of money and sell the yen when the dollar goes down. So I think, if anything, the Ministry of Finance and the Bank of Japan will be very careful, because if they intervene or do verbal intervention, it's got to be effective. And if they just have a small size intervention, that's going to give the market a good opportunity to buy back the dollar.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else you'd like to put into the old proverbial pot from Japan?
Kishida, Prime Minister Kishida's government rating, approval ratings really down now. There are many unfortunate incidents, like government is trying to digitize and introduce the new personal identification card, but they're attaching wrong people's health information to others, and it's sort of blocking the way the government is trying to digitize the bureaucracy and encouraging people to do the same. And also the government's tax panel, they suggested in the longer term they should overhaul some of the benefits, non-taxable pay, and that's bothering people, and the government is becoming unpopular, because tax council was saying maybe we should start taxing the commute allowance and other benefits. So it left impression that although when Kishida came into power, he said that we're going to fix the problems from neoliberalism, and we're going to redistribute wealth. But people are saying, well, you're not taxing the big companies, mm-hmm. and then now they're trying to tax small guys like us. So that's a bit of a problem on the consumer sentiment side.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for that, Max. Right, China then. Mr. Jackson,
yes.
What do you want to say, really? I guess we've had some slightly better news out of China over the last, since you were last on the podcast anyway, but another cut in banks' reserve requirements last week. So what's going on? Better picture, or we still got big problems out there?
I think they're still tweaking with policy, but they don't believe that they need to have a major shift in the policy stance. They've been pretty reluctant, I think, to make any huge adjustments, but still recognizing that obviously the recovery that we sort of saw at the start of the year has sort of lost a fair bit of momentum. So I think they're just hoping that they can sort of push through some of these loss of momentum period, this loss of momentum that we're seeing right now, without having to make a major adjustment in policy. And we've definitely seen, a few tweaks, as you say, the reserve requirements. They've, cut the loan prime rate a couple of times in the last few months, not this month, but and they've also tried to put in some measures to support the property market. And what we have seen in the property market, and that's obviously been a big focus, is at least a stabilization in house prices. We haven't definitely haven't seen a huge recovery, but we're not seeing the big year over year declines that we're seeing earlier on in the year.
And again, I guess it's the same as I asked with Max. I mean, we've seen the currency coming under significant pressure in the currency market. So are there any concerns there about performance of the yuan?
I guess they'd welcome the any support it might give to exporters, and to be honest, they're not and obviously inflation pressures are pretty subdued at the moment as well, so I don't think they're really too concerned about currency weakness flowing through into higher inflation. So similar to Max, I don't think that's the number one concern at the moment. Basically we've got pretty weak activity data. Even when we see some bouncing around in the year-over-year numbers, that's I think largely to do with base effects from what was happening 12 months ago, rather than it's not telling us as much information. Perhaps you'd rather look at the PMI surveys, and they're all bouncing around sort of that 50 level between contraction and expansion, and I think that's clearly the major focus at the moment.
Okay. I know perhaps most people might, or investors might, regard Chinese data being perhaps, how should we say, less reliable than some of the other major countries. But we appear to have some issues with the unemployment data, particularly. I mean, in July, China reported a record high unemployment rate for, I think it was at the 16 to 24 year olds. And then subsequently, they appear to have omitted actually releasing the youth unemployment statistics. Is that telling us something about the labour market, or is there something else going on there?
Well, to be honest, I mean, that's one of the indicators that we don't really cover on the platform, because, it is something that has in the past had a few issues, mm-hmm. and there have been queries about its reliability. I wouldn't read too much into just one sort of number, but I think looking at the PMI surveys is probably a better indication of the overall strength of activity.
Okay, fair enough. Right, let's move across your home part of the world, when the RBA, where we got no change out of their last meeting beginning of September time, but apparently they considered a 25 basis point hike. So again, does that mean that interest rates might not have plateaued there yet?
Well, I think they said exactly the same thing last month as well, that I think also the month before. So every time they go into the meeting, they are considering these two options of no change and going again. So, you'd clearly say that the bias is towards another rate hike, and they're not ruling that out. But that's not to say that that's what they're going to do going forward. I think they would hope that they've done enough already, and that they don't need to keep on tightening policy. And I think that's you know, really a common theme, you know, outside of China, right across the region. We have central banks now right across the region for several months in a holding pattern with their policy. So it's almost like they've administered the medicine to try and you know, cure the disease of high inflation, and now they're hoping that medicine works without too many side effects on in terms of growth. And that's I think true of the RBA as well.
Yeah, fair enough. If I'm not sure, just in terms of knock-on effects from China, as you're talking about, yeah, China, the recovery so far this year has been pretty disappointing. How important do you think that might be in terms of what happens to RBA interest rates because of its potential implications for the Australian economy's growth?
Yeah, it's a big factor. I mean, China is one of our major trading partners, and you know, it's always a big focus for the RBA. What we have, though, seen is probably a move away from China as, you know, given some of the problems in the bilateral relationship and the trading relationship over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, and a real focus on trying to perhaps diversify our trade portfolio a little bit, given some of those issues that we have had with China. You know, there's definitely a focus to try and building the trading relationship with India in particular, but just elsewhere in the region as well. So, you know, to the extent that that's happening, you know, China obviously is not quite as important for the RBA as it was maybe 5-10 years ago, but it's still a big factor, no doubt.
Right, fair enough. Anything to say about New Zealand? Obviously, we've got to go back to August time for the last RBNZ announcement, but any of any interest in particular coming out of that?
No, again, I think, you know, they've been sort of the last to sort of switch to the pause mode. And so, again, similar to RBA, I think they would be biased towards hiking rates again if they felt that they had to, but perhaps hoping that they don't have to going forward and that what they've done is enough to get inflation back down. They've also had a bit of volatility in the data, just through, you know, some weather events and, you know, earthquakes and closing down oil refineries. And so there's a few little things that are definitely worth paying attention to that have driven some of the volatility in the New Zealand data. But I think the big picture is still the same as in other parts of the region, where they've administered the medicine and hope that it works to get inflation down.
Okay, wait and see. And just to round off from me anyway, in terms of sort of local currencies in the region, I mentioned we're very much in a strong dollar environment at the moment, which is typically, you know, not good news for local Asian currencies, since they come under perhaps disproportionate downside pressure. Is that likely to have any impact on their ability, do you think, to, you know, when they finally actually start getting into the rate cutting mode?
Yes, it will, but I guess that's still a way down the track, I would say. You know, as Terry was saying earlier on, you know, we're probably not going to see a real shift in monetary policy towards cutting, you know, until at least next year sometime, and perhaps later in the year as well. And so by that stage, we might have, you know, if the Fed is starting to show signs of this going to be cutting, then that could flow through to dollar strength, and have, you know, the same sort of impact on other regional currencies. So by the time that we actually get to the Fed starting to think about cutting rate, we might be in a different picture in terms of the exchange rates.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else you'd like to put in from your side?
No, as I said, it's I think a real dichotomy between China on one hand and the rest of the region, where China is still tweaking policy and still, you know, trying to loosen policy to try and kickstart this recovery that has lost momentum, whereas elsewhere in the region, it's very much a case of we've tightened policy pretty aggressively. Now we're hoping that we'll see the impact on inflation without too much of a downturn in growth.
Okay, great. Many thanks for that, Bron. Right, let's round off with Europe then. I guess I should kick off with last week and the European Central Bank. Last Thursday, we saw a 25 basis point increase from the ECB, which put the key deposit rate at 4%, which is a record high since the introduction of the euro currency. And indeed, the 10th time in as many meetings that we've seen interest rates go up. I can't say it's wholly expected, because given the weakness we've had in a lot of the eurozone data for quite a while now, to be perfectly honest, Econoday's relative performance index has been sub-zero, so in negative surprise territory, pretty well consistently since the back end of March time. It really does suggest that the weight of the slowdown in the domestic economy is finally starting to translate into, you know, worries for the central bank now about how growth is going to perform this year. So it wasn't wholly expected we would see an increase in 25 basis points, but at the same time, the bank had made noises, particularly from the hawks, that they'd actually get their way and see the interest rate hike coming through. But I guess the key takeaway from last week's action, indeed certainly from the way financial markets have been reacting, was the forward guidance, which of course the ECB keeps maintaining it doesn't actually provide forward guidance, but nonetheless, to quote from their statement, the Governing Council considers that key ECB interest rates have reached levels that, maintained for a sufficiently long duration, will make a substantial contribution to the timely return of inflation to target. So markets are very much seen that as reducing the chances of any further increases in official interest rates, and ultimately thinking that probably key interest rates have topped out. So it's probably, you know, looking at the way it's actually worded suggests consistent with this idea, again, of this higher for longer kind of scenario as far as interest rates are concerned. And that does seem to be perhaps where we're coming from now. It's got to be said, I think, looking at some of the comments we've had since the meeting, there must have been a fairly good old punch up around the governing table in terms of what actually happened, because quite clearly some of the more hawkish members were very happy to see higher interest rates, but didn't want to see any kind of statement kind of hinting that perhaps rates have topped out, where the more neutral and certainly the doves on the Governing Council Committee, they most definitely want to see interest rates at least on pause for the time being and see how the additional data come in, which is going to make it pretty interesting as we start going forward through the rest of this year in terms of ECB meetings. The next one's due on the 26th of October and the last one on the 14th of December. And then we watch pretty close is what they're going to do. I think at this stage, unless we see some big surprises coming through in the HIP, the Eurozone inflation figures, then chances are we probably will see interest rates, official interest rates anyway, at current levels, at least through the back end of the year. Having said all that, it's still the case, I think, at this stage anyway, the central bank is very much determined to, you know, to sell the message it's anti-inflation. So if we do see any changes, it's still going to be on the upside. Bank of England then into this week and some of the couple of today's announcements we had. Bank of England, no change. So bank rate over here stays at 5.25%. That was an interesting one because prior to the inflation figures we had out for the UK for August, they came out yesterday. It seemed as if another 25 basis point increase, which would put bank rate at 5.5%, was all but nailed on. In practice, the August numbers came in a good deal weaker than expected, and we've still got headline inflation at 6.7%, so it's hardly low, but say well down on the market consensus, and also a pretty chunky fall in the core rate, which now stands at 6.2%. And that, together with signs of a loosening labour market, seems to have been enough for the bank to decide that, well, 5.25% on bank rate is enough for the time being. So this is what, the first meeting in 15 that we haven't seen UK interest rates going up. That said, the vote was just, well, it was as tight as you can get. It was 5-4 in favour of no change in interest rates today. So it was Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey who had the casting vote there, which actually secured interest rates being maintained at current levels. Also, just looking at some of the commentary coming out of the bank, it kind of suggests that it doesn't really trust the official wage data from the Office of National Statistics. They currently have headline annual earnings growth running about 8.5%, which may or may not be right. But if you believe what what the bank believes, it seems to think that according to its regional agents, wages are rather lower than that. Having said which, it also suggests that if they are lower, they're still too high and they're probably only flatlining anyway. So I guess if you pull it all together at this stage, it's still the case looking as we go forward, keep an eye on what's happening to inflation, keep an eye on what's happening to wages. And for the time being, at least, although quite possibly now bank rate has topped out, we're going to see rates plateauing for quite a while, and we won't see an interest rate cut coming through until probably well into 2024. Swiss National Bank, the SNB decision we also had earlier on today, they seem to quite like enjoying tricking markets, or at least leading them down the wrong routes. There's been a lot of fairly hawkish talk coming out of the Swiss National Bank over the course of the last few weeks, which have left markets expecting another 25 basis point there in their policy rate. In practice, they chose not to tighten, so left their policy rate at 1.75%. And I guess really it's more of a reflection, an honest reflection of what's going on in the Swiss economy. It's been underperforming market expectations on the real economy for some while now. But more importantly, we've had both headline inflation and the core rate below 2% since June time. So apart from the fact that they've been talking interest rates up, or almost kind of intimating to markets that, you know, don't be surprised if interest rates do go up again, you know, the actual data themselves are really suggesting that, you know, interest rates at current levels are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that the cumulative tightening of, 225 basis points we've seen delivered since June of last year has really left policy restrictive enough to make sure that inflation stays just below the 2% mark. All that said, the SNB did warn that further interest rate hikes could not be ruled out. So it's very much wants to, you know, to maintain its anti-inflation credibility. But anyway, nothing out of the SNB today, which again probably means that unless we get some nasty surprises on the inflation data over coming months, takes us back to where we came in at the intro, keeping on what's going on with oil prices at the moment, then it could well be we'll actually start to see the next move coming out, the SNB being on the downside. Just quickly mention elsewhere across Europe, on the whole, I guess the trend still generally remains up. We had the Norges Bank out of Norway, so the Norwegian Central Bank, they tightened by 25 basis points today. And also the way they sell their product, they're talking about expecting another 25 basis points increase in December. The Riksbank out of Sweden also tightened by 25 basis points. That puts their benchmark rate at 4.0%. And again, with upside risk as far as the fourth quarter is concerned. But Poland, 7th of September, beginning of this month, they saw a surprisingly large cut, 75 basis points down to 6.0%, and that was a much steeper cut than anticipated. So mixed picture, but I guess what we can say, you know, pulling Europe together as a whole anyway, interest rates probably getting towards the peak and not at the peak at the moment, but any kind of near-term move certainly much more likely to be on the upside rather than on the downside. Okay then, well, that's probably enough from us little lot for today. In conclusion, well, I guess it certainly looks as if some central banks have pulled the final trigger on their tightening cycles, but I guess few can really feel confident they've broken the back of inflation. And your market, as we mentioned, could become a real problem again if current levels, or certainly higher oil price levels, are maintained over coming months. Bear in mind that the reduction in inflation where we have seen it, central banks will not want to see those improvements being thrown away. So easing of any kind of monetary policy too soon for the majority of monetary policies seems pretty unlikely. Don't expect any kind of interest rate cuts anytime soon. That said, of course, as ever, it's all down to the data. So do make sure you're always up to date on all the key market moving numbers and events in Econoday's global economic calendar. On behalf of Terry, Max Brown and me, thanks as ever for listening. We hope you can join us again next time. Bye for now.